Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
World of Secrets, Season 4. Al Fayed, Predator at Harrods.
Cash, with that you can control people.
Nothing comes for free.
Listen now, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. I'm Rahul Tandon. Just as we're coming to air, Hurricane Milton, which may affect the US state of Florida, well, that has strengthened to a Category 5 hurricane. And we're going to hear from businesses in the state about how they're going to deal with that and how it may affect them. But we're going to start the program by talking about two large social media companies. Firstly, in the US, where TikTok is now being sued by a number of US states. Why? Here's our North America business correspondent, Michelle Fleury.
So there's more than a dozen attorneys general here in America who have brought this case, alleging that TikTok is responsible for contributing to a teen mental health crisis here in the United States. There are things like the TikTok challenge, which is viral videos that encourages users to perform certain activities. So it's the kind of behavior they say that is encouraged, that is dangerous. There's also concern about TikTok's handling of children's data and generally their false sort of claims when it comes to the safety tools that they have in place. This lawsuit claiming they're just simply not adequate.
And what sort of response have we seen from TikTok so far to this?
Well, TikTok has pushed back against the allegations in the lawsuit, saying they disagree with the claims, many of which they called inaccurate and misleading. And in fact, they said they have done a lot to protect teens and they're going to continue to update and improve their product. They say that they have robust safeguards in place.
Michelle Fleury there. Now, here on World Business Report, we'd like to try and bring you some of the people who are at the centre of these stories. So we wanted to hear from one of those attorney generals. So here's Brian Schwab. He is from the District of Columbia, one of those that is suing TikTok.
The social media platform that TikTok operates is dangerous by design. It is an addictive product. I liken it to being digital nicotine for young people. It is designed to get people hooked on their screens for as long as possible, because the more time that they spend with their eyeballs on the screen, the more ad revenue that TikTok is able to generate.
Well, a lot of people would agree with you on that, but they would say that is the same for most social media companies. Why is TikTok any different from the others? Why not have cases against all of them?
Well, as you may know, my office and other AGs have brought lawsuits against other social media companies that are preying upon the mental health of young people and putting their profits above young people's mental health and brain development. We know that the process of having young people spending time on screen is driving ad revenue. And we also know that TikTok is well aware of the risks associated with mental health, depression, suicide, eating disorders, and other things that excessive social media use leads to young people. So our lawsuit is designed to hold TikTok accountable for peddling a product that it knows to be addictive and dangerous.
Well, TikTok will say that they disagree with those claims. They've said it, haven't they? They say they're inaccurate and misleading. They say they do put safety provisions in place. But I want to be clear here. Do you, you've talked about social media companies generally. Do you think TikTok is worse than the others, the same as the others?
I think what TikTok is engaged in is getting to young people younger than other social media companies and more effectively luring them into its platform and keeping them on its platform longer. It knows that its product is very effective at seizing upon some of the developmental frailties that teenagers have that are particularly susceptible to risk and reward functions that the algorithm is designed to exploit. We also, in our lawsuit, allege that TikTok is running an illegal and unlicensed money transmission business.
Explain what you mean. How are they doing that?
Well, TikTok has a feature called TikTok Coins, where people are engaging in commerce in real time. People buy and sell and deliver these TikTok coins that can be sometimes shown up as colorful characters and emojis designed for kids to think that they're collecting them. And what that's allowing predators to do is in real time cause young people to do things online for money. Unlike Venmo or PayPal or other companies that are licensed, that have oversight and regulations in place to prevent money laundering and fraud and exploitation, TikTok is circumventing those laws in its transmission business, and it earns up to 50% commission on every transmission, every financial transmission that it does through its TikTok coin function.
Can I put to you what Michael Hughes, a TikTok spokesperson, has said? We have endeavored to work with the attorney generals for over 2 years, and it is incredibly disappointing that they've taken this step rather than work with us. Why didn't you work with them?
Well, what's incredibly disappointing is that we did work with TikTok for 2 years. TikTok is well aware of the concerns we have for the mental health of our young people. It is well aware of its own research that demonstrates the kind of harms that its platform leads to. And it is TikTok that's chosen to be unwilling to change, unwilling to accommodate, unwilling to put reasonable constraints on its platform to protect people. And that effectively has led me and my colleagues, both Republicans and Democrats, to the position of realizing that absent going to court and trying to hold TikTok accountable, it's not going to change of its own volition.
Some would say, and I'm sure you will have heard these comments, that you go after TikTok because it's a Chinese company. You would take stronger action against them than you would do with an American company.
Well, that's completely untrue. And all somebody needs to do is look at our aggressive pending litigation against Meta and its Instagram platform to know that we're focused on companies that are taking advantage of, and perhaps more poignantly, putting young people at physical and mental risk. And we can't allow that behavior to go on while an entire generation is negatively impacted by a platform that puts profits over people.
Interesting to hear from Brian Schwab there. Diana Gupta is with us on the program. She is the behavioral financial advisor for Brighton Securities. Interesting to hear that interview now. And we are seeing, aren't we, a number of cases being brought against some of the world's big tech companies. Do you think that over time that will begin to affect their valuations?
That's a great question, Raul. Thanks for having me. Always nice chatting with you. That's a great question, and we want to look at the business perspective. What will it do for these companies, and will it change the way that they do business? Right now, it isn't for TikTok, but I think on a business perspective, TikTok's bigger picture is their parent company is battling a U.S. law that could ban the whole app in the United States.
That is something, isn't it, that we talked a lot about on this program. Let's see how that begins to unfold. Of course, the deadline is at the beginning of next year. Stay with us, because we're going to stay with social media companies, because in the last hour, we've learned that Brazil's Supreme Court has lifted a ban on the social media platform X after it agreed to pay a hefty fine and block the profiles of dozens of people accused of spreading disinformation. Our tech correspondent, Lily Jamali, joins us now. Lily, what do we remind our listeners, firstly, of why X have been banned in Brazil? We don't seem to have Lily there at the moment. We shall try and get her back very, very quickly. But Diana, just going back to you on this particular story, another example, isn't it, there, of the challenges that are facing these social media companies, because they operate in so many different areas.
Exactly, exactly. And the effects are so real and invasive to everyone, to all ages. Twitter, I think, is a little bit older, but absolutely, it can affect everyone. And then the ban and coming back is really interesting to watch, isn't it?
It is very interesting. Let us bring in Lily Jamali now, who's going to tell us about what's actually happened. Lily, let's start with reminding our listeners of why X was banned in the first place. Why was it?
Yeah, well, it's really about two men. Elon Musk, as usual in so many tech stories we do, is one of them. And the other is a justice on the Brazilian Supreme Court, Alexandre de Moraes, who in August took steps to block X in Brazil. But these two men have been locked in a dispute for many months. Leading up to that, this Supreme Court justice wanted Musk to shut down what he considered to be far-right social media accounts that were spreading on the platform, spreading misinformation there. And Musk framed that as an attack on free speech. It got pretty vitriolic. And for the last several weeks, you know, the site has been shut down. There's been some sporadic activity. At one point, X changed network providers there, and it was suddenly back for a little bit, which made everyone think at first that Elon Musk had skirted the ban, but the company immediately said that that was not their intent. But now they are back in compliance, you know, taking steps that this justice has demanded, you know, things like appointing a legal representative for the company in Brazil. There was also a dispute about a bunch of outstanding fines that various Musk enterprises have owed in Brazil. And that appears to be resolved now as well. So the country's communications regulator has 24 hours now to get this platform back up and running.
A lot of people will look at this and ask, who's caved in here? Is it possible to say who has?
That is the $44 billion question. And I use that number because that was the purchase price that Musk paid.
I'm not going to ask you what you think it's worth now, though. That's a different, different question.
A fraction of that. But I think Musk, it's fair to say, is the one who caved in. You know, he was very publicly displaying a lot of bravado leading up to the ban. And he has been remarkably quiet on the platform about this issue recently. He doesn't appear to have posted about even this victory on X. He needs those users back. And I'm not convinced he's going to get very loud about this. We're talking about tens of millions of people on the platform. They want to be back on it, and he wants them there as well.
That is the point, isn't it? Because he's got about 20 million people in Brazil who use X. That's a big number, isn't it? And, you know, he is a business. He's about the numbers. He needs that revenue coming in. So it's you can talk about free speech, but you've got to, whether you rightly or wrongly think that's the case in Brazil, you've got to balance that against what your company needs in terms of its books.
That's right. And I think a lot of people would dispute his persona, the way he likes to present himself as a free speech warrior. You know, the first thing he did when he took over the platform was ban a couple of journalists from the platform. And then he overturned that decision after getting a lot of flack for it. But that aside, as you say, there are tens of millions of people that have been using Brazil over the have been using X in Brazil over the years. And it's actually an interesting place because there are so many Stan accounts on Twitter there, or what used to be Twitter, fan accounts that celebrate artists and various causes. And so there's sort of a very interesting ecosystem in terms of the types of users that reside there. So as I say, you know, they were not happy about this ban. My colleague Ben DiRico, a BBC News producer here, has been in touch with a number of these users who have looked at alternatives like Blue Sky, for example, which did see a surge in usership. But if all your friends aren't there, it's just not the same. If you spent 10, 15 years building a platform on one you know, social media site and then it's gone, it's really hard to kind of muster the strength and the energy to rebuild it from scratch.
Lily, thank you for joining us. Back to watching the world of tech, or the world of Elon Musk. Sometimes they can be the same thing. Thanks so much for joining us once again on the program. And Deanna, here is the problem, isn't it? Because we were talking there with Lily about it. In terms of that valuation of X, it's slightly more difficult to do now because this is a private company, not one that is listed on a stock exchange anymore.
100%. You've got that right, yeah.
You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service.
He owned iconic luxury brands.
Harrods was the ultimate glamorous shop.
The most famous people in the world coming there.
But Mohammed Al-Fayed used his wealth and power to control more than just his business interests.
Mohammed Al-Fayed was like an apex predator.
World of Secrets, Season 4. Al-Fayed, Predator at Harrods, from the BBC. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Let us now turn to a story that has been dominating the headlines on the BBC World Service and is going to continue to do so over the next 24 hours or so, because we're talking, aren't we, about Hurricane Milton, that ferocious storm that is approaching the west coast of Florida, the second in less than a fortnight. It's just been upgraded to Category 5. The governor of Florida, where it's probably going to cause the most damage, Ron DeSantis, has called on residents to evacuate.
You do have time to get to a shelter. You have time to evacuate further than that, if that's what you want. But that time is running out. As we get into Wednesday, there's no guarantee what the weather is going to be like starting Wednesday morning. You may have a window where it may be safe, but you may not. So use today as your day to finalize and execute the plan that is going to protect you and your family.
We're going to hear from a truck driver in a few minutes who's in Florida delivering some supplies about what she's seen on the roads in terms of people leaving. But we wanted to hear from a business once again on this program, because this is a difficult time for many people in the state, but also difficult for the economy. Emily is co-owner of a small business in Tampa called Seamaids Creamery. Together with her mum and other staff, they've had a pretty busy day in the shop. Emily, thanks so much for joining us here on World Business Report. What have you been doing today to try and protect your shop?
Hi, so thank you for having us, you guys. We have been, we own an ice cream shop in Florida, so we usually lose power. So we've been just trying to consolidate as much ice cream as we can, blast our freezers, boarding up all of our windows, really reaching out to the community and seeing, if we can get them to, just get some ice cream before we probably inevitably lose everything.
And did you manage to do that?
We knocked out at least one freezer, so we're really, really thankful for that.
We're thankful for the centralized community.
Yeah, we have a very good supportive community, and it has been crazy everywhere. So we're really lucky at this point, that people have even showed up and reached out a hand to us.
I know your mom's been helping. Is that her in the background that we can hear?
Yes, yeah. Hi, how are you?
Well, we're great to have you both on the program. Look, you sound in good spirits, but you're running a business, and this is not easy, is it? Because you don't know how long you're going to have to shut down for. You don't know where this storm is going to hit and what's going to be left when you come back.
Exactly.
We just got hit with one, too, last week as well. So it's definitely a very scary, crazy time.
Emily, what's the name of your mum, by the way? We don't have that.
I'm Zoe. Nice to meet you.
Zoe, very nice to meet you as well. What was that like being hit by a storm a few weeks ago? Now another one coming, for your business. It must be a really difficult time.
It really has been a difficult time. It affected our deliveries. It affected, the numbers, the sales. People didn't really want to come out. It's been raining a lot. So we're just trying to stay afloat and, like I said, we have a very supportive community. So we're very thankful that at least we have them to come out and help out.
You said they're trying to stay afloat. How do you do that? How do you plan to do that when you don't know what the next week or so is going to hold for you?
We don't know. That's the thing. It's a waiting game, basically, right now. Hopefully the shop is still there when we come back, when this hurricane passes.
And just we're kind of relying on reaching out to the community as well. We're all kind of in the same boat, and just
support one another.
Try to be there for our neighbors, and they'll be there for us as well.
Where are you going to go now? What happens? Do you obviously barricaded up the shop. Are you leaving the area? Will you be somewhere safe, close to the shop?
Well, yeah, we will definitely be closer to the shop, but a little bit further north. So at home, my home by Temple Terrace. So we will definitely be up there. And just hope that nothing happens,
Yeah, we all hope that is the case. So your final question to you both. What about insurance? Are you worried about that? Because there's lots of stories, isn't there, about whether if things get damaged, whether those insurance policies are going to hold?
Actually, that happened to us with the last hurricane where we did lose a lot of product. We filed insurance and then they dropped us. So that's another. Yeah. And then they didn't cover. So I had to shop around for new insurance. And finally, I was able to find State Farm and they're covering us for now. So hopefully it doesn't happen again.
Well, listen,
that's the scary part.
And there's lots of scary parts, aren't there, at the moment, I think, in Florida. Look, it's been, Zoe, Emily, it's been a real pleasure speaking to both of you. We're going to check back in with you over the next few days and just see,
please,
you know, what is happening with the business when Hurricane Milton passes the area. We heard, didn't we, there, from the governor asking people to evacuate. But, of course, you need to get supplies in for the economy to continue. Mariette is a truck driver. She currently has just got into Florida. She is delivering milk. I asked her about what she's seen on her way.
There's plenty coming in. Most of what I'm seeing coming in are like fuel trucks and trucks that will be aiding in repairing power lines and trucks that people that will be doing tree cleanup. They've got their little tree chippers right behind them. I've also saw a whole line. There was probably about 14 to 16 fueling trucks that I saw coming in, and they were all, it was very apparent, they were traveling together to resupply some of the fuel that is being used, because there's spots already here in Florida that are suffering for fuel.
Yeah, I read
because
about
of
that.
All the, yeah, the traffic going out was horrendous, and I'm like, oh, Lord, help me when I go to get out of here.
Give us a sense of what you saw on the other side of the road. When you said it was horrendous, how long were some of those queues? Were your cars just gridlocked?
It was gridlocked, absolutely. They were moving at like 5 miles an hour, if that. A lot of times traffic was just stopped for no apparent reason. They're just stopped. And so they're not moving very fast whatsoever. And that was a lot of four-wheelers cars, pickup trucks. There were some semis in that. That's what I saw. People with their travel trailers hooked behind leaving. You could tell that they were leaving the area. I don't know for how long, but you could tell they were leaving.
You're a truck driver driving into a state that's about to face one of the most difficult times it's faced for a very long time. What have you got in your truck?
I have a truck full of milk, which is why I chose to go ahead and come in today. Felt like it was better for them to get this in their possession than for me to sit outside of the state and wait.
Was that an option?
It was an option. My company gave me an option of parking and waiting to come in later, or I could come in today.
Fascinating to hear from Marietta there. Let's bring Deanna back in here. This is part of the world you know. Well, it was interesting to hear from that business about insurance. That is going to be a huge challenge for many businesses in Florida.
Yeah, many are saying climate change is breaking insurance, you know, and then we think of this, and it was so sad to see Emily have that experience where she did have a major claim and either it wasn't covered or then she got dropped. We see flooding's getting worse and fewer people have the correct coverages.
Yeah, we are hearing more and more of that, aren't we, here on this program as we look at what's happening in Florida. Let's bring in John Schnee, Director of Catastrophe Response at CoreLogic, who are looking into how much these events are costing the economy. Can we start with what we've seen so far this year? Because we've had a number of events, haven't we, in the US. We've talked a lot about them on this program, which have disrupted businesses. Is it possible, John, to sort of total up the sort of damage it's done to the economy?
Hi, Rolf. It's a great question. Thank you so much for having me on this evening. It's been an interesting year, for sure, from a hurricane sort of general economic impact standpoint. It was a season we were all expecting to be record-breaking across the board, right? All the ingredients were there for it to be not only active, but damaging. And we had what was a pretty quiet summer. I mean, Beryl made a bit of a splash in the U.S. in the Houston area. But in between then and now, we hadn't seen much. And then to have back-to-back major loss events, within the span of a week and a half, it's going to prove to be somewhat of a test for the insurance industry at large.
Give us a sense when you're trying to add those numbers up. You know, let's take Hurricane Helene firstly. Do we know now how much damage it has done, the total cost of it?
It's a great question. And when the total cost, right, we won't know for a long time until all those claims start to be settled and the sort of the indemnity or the amount of dollars paid out can be total. But we can do a fairly good exercise in estimating what the losses will be, the total economic loss, sort of.
Give us those numbers.
Of course. So, you know, we estimated our Hurricane Helene to be sort of in the 30.5 to $47.5 billion of total economic damage. And that's, covering a great amount. And we expect the insurance industry at large, you know, whether that be the private insured markets or the National Flood Insurance Program, to be able to provide between $10.5 and $17.5 billion worth of recovery to policyholders.
A lot of people will look at this and wonder whether it means, and we've seen this, haven't we, that a number of insurance companies have decided not to continue in Florida because of the sort of events that we are talking about. Do you think that we may see more of them leave now?
It's a difficult question to say because a lot of the ratings agencies have said these insurers are well capitalized to be able to handle these large loss events.
But if there's so many of them, it gets harder, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does get harder, and there will be availability issues. Certainly, the case as more insurers tend to pull out of the market, becomes an availability problem, and it puts more pressure on these sort of insurer of last resort in Florida Citizens.
Yeah, that is there, isn't it? To try and give some people who are struggling to get insurance some sort of insurance, because the economic consequences of not having insurance are huge. In terms of for the housing market, but also for the business community. We heard from Emily and her mom there. If they can't get insurance and there are weather conditions, it's going to make you think twice about setting up a business there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely going to be a consideration if you are thinking about moving or purchasing a new home. The cost associated with having to purchase flood insurance, if you're in the special flood hazard area, obviously it's required for a federally backed mortgage. These are things that need to be considered in the home buying process. It is an additional cost to have that coverage. The difference between what you might receive in federal assistance versus what you would get paid from a National Flood Insurance Program policy is enormous, right? These policies go up to $250,000 for residential policies. That's enormously beneficial for recovery as opposed to relying on self-insurance or federal assistance.
John, I'm sure it's going to be a busy 24, 48 hours for you as you begin to try and estimate what sort of damage, the cost of the damage that Hurricane Milton is going to bring to that area. Let's just remind you where we started the programs in some ways, that hurricane has now re-strengthened as it heads towards Tampa and other areas of Florida to Category 5, which means that it is continuing to pick up speed. We are going to return to Florida for our Business Matters program and bring you the latest on what is happening there. Thanks to Deanna for joining us on the program. But that is it for World Business Report.
He owned iconic luxury brands.
Harrods was the ultimate glamorous shop.
The most famous people in the world coming there.
But Mohammed Al-Fayed used his wealth and power to control more than just his business interests.
Mohammed Al-Fayed was like an apex predator.
World of Secrets, Season 4. Al-Fayed, Predator at Harrods, from the BBC. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.